Would rappers be the deadliest wizards in Harry Potter? Why is it I can recognize clickbait almost every time, but still, I want to know what that child celebrity looks like today? And was the invention of urinals a tall guy walking by a sink and thought, why not? All these questions and more on the Abnormal Matters podcast.
It's always one of my fears, though, is going into the, you know, they always have a low urinal.
Yeah.
Yeah, you walk up to that one, because it's always by the wall or something like that, you know, and you start using it, and then someone that actually needs it walks in. What the fuck are you doing on my toilet?
My bad, dude.
I did have another one, but it was pretty bad. It was, would don't kid yourself be a great slogan for an abortion clinic?
Holy cancel culture is fucking starting up right there.
I left that one off to the side.
Next time.
It's already on air now.
I can always edit it.
I have one. If you throw a cat out the window, is it considered kitty litter? I didn't want to do that one either.
That's a good one. But this is episode 25.
Yes, sir.
26.
26, damn it.
25.
No, we did a part two. Yeah, so I had to post that one. So this is episode 26.
Thanks.
And we are going to be covering the moon landing conspiracies.
Yeah, everything that surrounds it. 7 episodes.
Yeah. And we've also hit a marker of 3,000 listeners.
Nice. Funny thing, they do say that if you can make it past 7, then you're golden and you're good. So you just got to build a listenership and hopefully everyone starts telling their friends about us.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they hate us and they're going to go, listen to these jackasses.
Right. It's how Howard Stern made it.
Yeah. It's like, I don't care.
It's all my friends.
I don't care why you listen, just as long as you listen.
I forget what the statistic was in the movie. They said they have...
In Private Parts?
Yeah. They were like, we have 48% of people that love him and listen. Well, what about the other people? That's 56% that hate him and they still listen.
He's still rocking.
But, of course, you know, we always want to give you our science news of the week. And, Mr. Mark, you had it this week.
So yeah, I actually pulled it off planetary.org. The one I did was Perseverance lands on Mars.
Nice.
So that just recently happened. It was launched on the 30th of July, 2020. So right in the middle of our pandemic. But on February 18th, a couple days ago... 2021, it landed in Jezero Crater, the site of an ancient lake and river delta. There, the rover will search for microbial fossils and rocks that formed in Mars' warm, wet past. It will also look for carbon-containing molecules called organics that form the building blocks of life on Earth. Perseverance will also conduct soil and rock samples as it travels and store them in tubes, and they're hoping like future launches and stuff like that from like NASA and the European Space Agency will actually be able to collect them. Because right now it's just the rover that's on on the planet. I watched the landing of it. It was pretty cool watching the chute come out. And it's slowing it down because the thing's moving thousands and thousands of miles an hour.
They actually filmed the landing of it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It had cameras facing up and down.
Where you watch time. That at?
NASA, probably. NASA.org, I think.
Nice.
And the actual parachute had a digital encrypted message in it.
Yeah, I saw that.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
They were talking about how what happened, though. They, as it's coming down, the retro rockets start firing off the landing unit, or sky crane, whatever they call it. And then it slowly tethered it down slower and slower. And then once it landed, the landing unit fucked off and just shot off into the distance and buried itself inside of a mountain somewhere.
That's crazy. I didn't even know they did shit like that.
Yeah, they did that secret message in binary, I think they said.
It's a one-ton vehicle, six-wheel vehicle, the size of a compact car. And it's based on the same design as the nuclear-powered Curiosity. And it can operate through dust storms that block sunlight required by solar-powered spacecraft. To land it, they improved on the complex 7-minute landing sequence. And they called it the 7 minutes of terror. And that's where they had that supersonic parachute come out and then the thrusters deploy. Using images from navigation cameras placed strategically around the rover, as well as imagery from orbital satellites such as NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, scientists and mission operators will work together to drive Perseverance to promising science areas to, you know, start doing its mission. It's pretty cool, the equipment that this thing has on it. I don't know how to explain or say the name on it, but I want to say ramen.
Let's do it.
It looks like ramen noodles. But it has two life-scanning tools called ramen spectrometers. They shine like ultraviolet light on the rocks.
Is it an acronym, the ramen thing?
Doesn't look like it.
No.
But the way it does the light signatures and detects it, it can actually tell the chemical compounds that are present in the rocks.
So it doesn't even need to dig. It's just scanning.
But it also has a robotic arm named Sherlock. That is an acronym. I don't know what it stands for. And it has a super cam on it also. So it can actually has a laser that can zap rocks several meters away.
Oh, shit.
So it'll look for signs of microscopic life using a Pixel, P-I-X-L, camera that's on the robotic arm that can actually see as small as a grain of salt. And it has some kind of radar system on the back, too, that can actually detect water 10 meters underneath the ground.
That's cool.
Because they think any of the water might be in a permafrost underneath the ground now that might still hold any kind of life in it. Then the other cool thing is it has a little small helicopter drone underneath it.
Oh,
so he dropped it out of its belly and then it moved forward. And it's going to do like a 30-day flight test and fly around getting ready for a 2034 NASA mission with a Dragonfly spacecraft, which is an 8-bladed drone. And that'll explore Saturn's largest moon, Titan.
That's cool. Because that's where we expect to really see life, underneath the ocean.
That'd be nice. The moon Titan. Of the moon, one of the moons of Jupiter, was it Ion or something like that?
I forget the name, but yes.
Where it's actually so close to Jupiter that Jupiter's tidal forces actually expand and contract the moon, causing friction inside of it and heat to where it actually has liquid water possibly on it, even though it's so far from the sun. It's that actual friction caused by Jupiter caused that, which could mean that you might not need a star.
Europa? Actually,
it might be Europa.
I think it's Europa.
You won't actually need a star in your solar system to actually keep a planet warm enough for life, because the actual friction and tidal pulls of the planet can do it.
Dang.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Oh, yeah.
So,
couple things on that. I think NASA is 4 for 4 on Mars missions. Dropping shit onto Mars.
I thought one impacted.
There was one that impacted, I think, in the 90s. And it was...
Didn't make it?
No, it just buried.
Okay, so 3 for 4. That ain't bad. Yeah.
75%. It's the one where they infamously did like the... they did like the landing specs in like feet instead of meters.
Oh, shit.
So it just buried into the side of the planet. Oops, forgot that conversion chart.
And then that ass puckering that you were talking about, mm-hmm. like when it's about to land and they don't know, the reason that they can't do anything to help it is because if they were to try to send commands, it would take something like 7 minutes for it to actually
react. For correctional.
Yeah, for correctional things.
What's the gravity force on Mars compared to Earth?
It's like 1/5 or one... No,
it's...
Moon is 1/6.
1/6, yeah.
I forget Mars. It's a little bit higher. I don't know.
I think it's just a tad higher possibly.
Like maybe 1/8? Or no, the other way.
1 1/8 maybe?
Well, it'd be the other way.
Quarter? Speculation.
Maybe? I don't know.
Let's go to our trusty friend.
He'd be lighter.
Google.
You'd be heavier on Mars. Okay. Because Mars has more gravity than the moon.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was heavier or lighter.
But in fractions, the lower you go, the heavier it is.
It's lighter. It's about half, almost. By what I'm reading here.
Just trying to imagine like a 3-ton vehicle just like... it's buried 10 feet. I'm like, well, fuck. $170 million buried in the dirt.
Right.
Yeah, Earth is 2.6 times that of Mars.
Okay.
The average temperature is 57 degrees on Earth and negative 81 on Mars.
And I heard a good tidbit, too, about Mars today, that the issue of atmosphere on Mars and Earth, what keeps us alive, it's all about the pressure. And water on Earth has a boiling point of 212 Fahrenheit.
Yep.
And our body temperature stays at, 98.6 or something like that?
98, somewhere in that range.
So that's what kind of keeps us alive, that gap right there.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Mars, the boiling point goes down because the pressure is lower on Mars. And the boiling point on Mars is something like 76 degrees.
Oh, hell no.
So if you were to walk out, the water inside you would start boiling.
Basically just ignite.
Well, it wouldn't cook it because you're not at a temperature, but it would evaporate.
And we're made up of 70%, 75% water. We'd just be boiled. It's not the way I'd want to go out.
No. I don't think that temperature. I think it's boiling, but boiling not in the sense of what we're thinking of cooking on a stove, though.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
You would just
It's the
point where it turns from a solid to a gas.
Yes.
That point, not actually a temperature thing.
Right. That would be fun. All right. Well, you guys want to get into it? Because I'm excited.
Fuck yeah.
About the moon landing here. I got a lot of fucking conspiracies and shit to go through. Evidence to the court. So, I mean, who wants to kick it off?
I'll kick it off. So, President Kennedy made a speech to a joint session in Congress in May 25th, 1961, that I believe the nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to Earth.
I would actually like you to do it in the Bostonian accent,
please. I can't do it in the Bostonian accent. The only Bostonian accent I can do is Wicked Smart. And that's even fucking horrible.
What was the first man-made object, wasn't that from the Soviets in
Sputnik,
yeah. It was September like 59?
Yeah, it was in the 50s.
Late 50s,
yeah.
Yeah, so we had the Cold War race going on, and of course, they were ahead of us, and they got Sputnik up and everything else, so that's why we kind of got the timeline going.
Pulled a Ricky Bobby. If you're not first, you're last.
You better get moving. So on January 27, 1967, 1966, after 5 years of work, the international teams of scientists and engineers conducted the first unmanned Apollo mission. So just testing the integrity of the actual launch vehicles, see if they would go up.
And that was with the Gemini, right? Was that the Gemini project?
It was...
Because they were right before Apollo.
The Gemini was before, yeah. The Apollo was the first one was unmanned.
Okay.
Then in 67, tragedy spoke when a fire broke out during a manned launch pad test, and the Saturn rockets blew up, basically, and killed three astronauts in the fire.
Which were supposedly the ones that were supposed to touch down on the moon. It wasn't supposed to be Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin at first. It was supposed to be those guys. But there's more conspiracy into that.
October 68, Apollo 7, the first manned Apollo mission, orbited the Earth and successfully tested many of the systems, getting ready for the journey. December the same year, Apollo 8 took three astronauts to the dark side of the moon and back. March of 69, Apollo 9 tested the lunar module for the first time in Earth orbit. And then... three astronauts of the Apollo 10 took the first complete Apollo spacecraft around the moon in a dry run for the scheduled July landing. So, July 16th, 1969, Apollo 11 astronauts Neil Armstrong, Cap, Buzz Aldrin, Buzz,
and Michael, that other guy.
And Michael Collins. And do you know Michael Collins' nickname?
No.
Michael Collins.
Yeah. I was going to say, I did not know there was
just the other guy.
Nobody ever remembers fucking Michael Collins.
No, no one
They're
does.
Like, Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, and...
the other guy.
The other guy.
Well, what's his face? Yeah. Old Cletus.
But they sat on top of the Saturn V rocket, and it's a 363-foot rocket with 7.5 million pounds of thrust to propel him into space. At 9:32 a.m., the engines fired, the tower cleared, and about 12 minutes later, the crew is in Earth orbit. I got a little audio here.
30 seconds and counting. Astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
Here we got a roll program.
Neil Armstrong reporting the roll and pitch program, which puts Apollo 11 on a proper heading.
So after 1.5 orbits around the Earth, Apollo 11 gets a go for mission control for the translunar injection. In other words, time to head to the moon.
Yeah.
So
you've slingshotted enough.
After traveling 240,000 miles in 76 hours, Apollo 11 entered into the lunar orbit on July 19th. The next day at 1:46, the lunar module Eagle, manned by Armstrong and Aldrin, separated from the command module where the other guy flew around in orbit.
He was like their Uber.
Yeah. Just a taxi service.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Go that far.
But it was cool, though, because you got to see the dark side of the moon.
That's
which
cool.
There
That's
is a lot of conspiracies behind on the dark side of the moon, where they'd see fucking structures and that kind of stuff that aren't natural. And he even... I don't know if it was Michael Collins, but there had been astronauts that on the dark side of the moon had seen weird flashes of light.
And gotten weird transmissions.
And gotten weird transmissions and had seen weird stuff on the backside of the moon, which is kind of weird because the moon is tidally locked. So we only see
one side.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, when it comes time to set Eagle down in the Sea of Tranquility, Armstrong improvises manually piloting the ship past an area littered with boulders. During the final seconds of the descent, Eagle's computers start sounding alarms. It turns out to be a simple case of the computer trying to do too many things at once, but as Aldrin will later point out, unfortunately, it came up when we did not want to be trying to solve these particular problems. So it's kind of lean in. Worst case scenario.
Were they looking at porn?
Yeah.
And crashed the computer?
Really? A computer couldn't make a phone call, probably. It could do one thing, land it. When the lunar module lands at 4:17 Eastern Time, only 30 seconds of fuel remained. Neil Armstrong was 38 years old at the time.
Altitude, velocity, light. 8.5 down. 220 feet.
Please do the calculations in feet, not meters.
Pull forward, drift into the right a little. 8.5. 30 seconds. Forward, drift.
30 seconds of fuel.
Such a tight window.
Contact light.
Okay, engine stop. Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
People are literally going ape shit right now.
Yeah.
4 seconds of fuel left.
Yeah, Armstrong said that the unknowns were rampant and there were just thousands of things to worry about. So he was scared as all to hell. At 10:56 p.m., Armstrong is ready to stand on the moon with more than 500 million people watching on TV.
I'm going to step off the land now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Now, I do have a good tidbit about that. And you can kind of hear his radio break up.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't mean to say that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. There was an A in there.
Yeah.
That's one small step for a man. And his radio kind of broke out for a second, but that was the quote that he had came up with.
Yeah.
One small step for a man and then one giant leap for mankind.
When you're watching the actual landing and stuff like that and the actual footage of it and then the actual footage of the walk, it's interesting. You can hear it plain as day, but the guys at the CBS, they're just like, what the hell did he say? What did he say? Because they didn't catch the last part of it. Aldrin joined him shortly and said it was magnificent desolation. And then they explored the surface for about 2.5 hours, collected samples, and took photographs. They left behind an American flag, a patch honoring the fallen Apollo 1 crew, and a plaque on one of the Eagle's legs. And it reads, "Here's men from the planet Earth first set foot upon the moon, July 1969. We came in peace for all mankind." By 1:11 a.m. on July 21st, both astronauts were back in the lunar module and the hatch was closed. The two men slept that night on the surface of the moon. And at 1:54 p.m., the Eagle began its ascent back up to the command module. Armstrong and Aldrin blast off and dock with Collins in Columbia. Collins later says that was for the first time he really felt that they were going to carry this thing off. So that whole time he's still not knowing if, you know, it's going to go right or not. And it's odd that he's just circling around
right
by himself, just waiting on them. At 5:35 p.m., Armstrong and Aldrin successfully docked with Collins. At 12:56 on July 22nd, they began their journey home and eventually splashed down in the Pacific Ocean at 12:50 p.m. on July 24th off the coast of Hawaii.
What a place to land, yeah, though, you know right? What I mean?
Yeah.
We just got back from the moon, bitch. I'm in Hawaii now.
Give me a fucking lay.
Yeah.
I need a Mai Tai
and a lay around my neck.
Lay around my neck. I don't care what's in the Mai Tai. I just need the little fuzzy umbrella.
Can you imagine the amount of pressure? Literally, being up in space, the atmosphere alone is trying to kill you the whole fucking time.
Oh, like a lack of, yeah.
And then you get back home. I'm not flying a plane again. I'm not ever leaving the ground ever again. I might just sleep on the damn floor.
Well, over the next 3.5 years, 10 astronauts will follow in the footsteps. Gene Cernan, commander of the last Apollo mission, leaves the lunar surface with these words, "We leave as we came, and God willing, as we shall return. With peace and hope for all mankind." There will be 5 more successful lunar landing missions and 1 unplanned lunar swing by Apollo 13. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that they had to abort with technical difficulties. The last man to walk on the moon was astronauts Eugene Cernan and Harrison Schmitt of the Apollo 17 mission, and they left in December 14, 1972.
That's what I was going to say. It was Apollo 11 through 17, mm-hmm. where there were manned missions to the moon, like where humans were actually on the moon.
And you had a bunch of stuff about the Russians, didn't you?
I really more or less had how many missions we did, or they did from, this is just kind of just like a little graph, and it was moon missions from 1958 to 1965. Soviets had 20 total missions, 17 of them were failures. I giggled when I saw partial success. It's either you're hitting the moon or you're not. There is no in-between. But the Soviets chalked this one up as a W. The partial success was first spacecraft to reach escape velocity, really more or less a lunar flyby. They completely missed it. So it was more just like a, we're on target, we drank too much, we didn't calculate correctly. And then, as Mark had gone through and explained, in 1958 through 1965, the U.S. had 18 total missions. We had 14 failures. Oh, by the way, the Soviets that were successful, they had two successful missions. That was Luna 2 and 3. But those were unmanned crews, I believe.
Okay.
And then the U.S., 18 total, 14 failures. We also had a partial. It was the first U.S. spacecraft to reach a celestial body, crash impact. Unfortunately, no photos were recovered. It was the Pioneer 4. And we had three successful unmanned, which were Ranger 7, 8, and 9.
I just got to add in how much fucked up shit, though, the Russians did. Mm-hmm. They were sending fucking dogs, monkeys,
chickens, yeah.
All this kind of stuff. And getting the recordings of how much radiation they were taking in, you know, and not expecting them to come back at all.
Well knowing they were sending
animals. Oh, yeah, for sure. Even astronauts, or cosmonauts, I should say, because they call them cosmonauts.
Yeah.
They sent cosmonauts up, like, maybe you'll come back. Maybe don't know. Yeah. Take a bottle of vodka with you.
Then I had from 1966 to 1976, Soviets 17 total missions, 7 failures, 10 successes, Luna 9, 13, 16, 17, 20, 21, 24, also all unmanned. The U.S. between 66 and 76, 7 total, 2 failures, 5 successes. That was the Surveyor 1, 3, 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah, there was a couple of amateur radio guys in Italy, a couple of Italian brothers that just, you know, had a big setup in their place and just listened to fucking radio shit. And it was an undocumented flight test from the Russians. These two Italian guys picked up on the radio this transmission of this Russian panicking. And it when they translated it, it was basically saying, like, I'm burning up. And yeah, like they tried to go back to the Russians, like, what the fuck is this? And they don't know what you're talking about. You know, they just kind of kept it under wraps. But yeah, they sent somebody up just to probably try the shielding of coming back into atmosphere. And that fucker burned up.
Didn't hear about that on the news.
Yeah. Yeah.
CNN didn't cover that one.
Uh-uh. But what do you guys say we get into the conspiracies?
Yep.
I thought you wanted to talk about the Van Allen belt.
Oh, that's part of the conspiracy. It's part of
it. You want to start with that one? Especially because we just got done talking about somebody coming back in from Russia. Or do you want to start with some other things? Because Van Allen belt, we know, is true. Some of these other ones.
I want to do one of the conspiracies that I don't believe in.
Yeah.
Even if it was faked or not.
I got a few. Which one are you thinking?
So, evidence to the court, evidence A1 is the American flag appears to wave in the Luron wind. All right. So if you look, the claim is that when they were putting the flag in, you could see it obviously waving and blah, 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 so you could see wind. Even if you were doing this in a studio and faking this, you wouldn't see any wind unless you had a fucking like fan pushing on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the way that that NASA explains it is obviously they had a rod at the top, and the way that they had it compartment to be able to send up there, when they pull that shit out, I mean, just like anything, it's going to be wrinkly and that kind of stuff. But they had a rod at the top, so that way, because there is no atmosphere on the moon. So it would just slump over.
Yeah, it would just hang there. You wouldn't be able to tell.
Right.
It was a flag.
And if you were to fake it in a studio, you would want to do the same thing. You would want to put a rod so that way it's actually sitting out.
Yeah, and the thing with it too is if you actually watch the footage, there's footage, you can watch it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Of them planting the flag. And it's about 2.5 hours long, 3 hours long of just them focusing on the flag as they put it up.
Right.
The flag is up for 2.5, 3 hours of the video. No cuts, nothing. The flag never moves.
The only time it moves is when they're
physically manipulating the poles to put it into the ground.
And then they're when they let go,
it's not moving anymore. And it literally stays like that. Even if you fast forward through the video for 3.5, 4 hours, however long it is.
Yeah.
The camera's stationary. The flag is stationary. It never moves. But you see everybody else just spinning around, running around behind it. It never moves once.
So, I would say that conspiracy to be able to lead it to be either real or fake is bunk.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It's all bunk.
Mierda de toro. It's bullshit.
So then, I mean, fuck it. Let's get into that. The Van Allen belt. Because that is the biggest one that I can't believe that we went to the moon. It's the biggest stopper for me is the Van Allen belt. So, evidence B is if the astronauts had left the safety of the Van Allen belt, the radiation would have killed them. And there's two parts of the Van Allen belt. There's an inner and an outer.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of explain it to some of the people that don't know what the Van Allen belt is, Van Allen belt is what keeps us alive from the sun. The sun gives off so much radiation, so much, even from like just minor solar winds, and getting blasted by one of those, we would be done if we didn't have the Van Allen belt. And it's the magnetic belt that disperses any of that radiation that's coming off the sun. And where that radiation meets the Van Allen belt, it is supercharged particles of radiation that are being held right there at that area. And, I mean, that's where we get our aurora borealis, when the actual belt snaps and moves backwards and the new part of the belt moves up. And, it's made from the Earth. It's natural. It's always been there. We found out about it in 1959. So we well knew about this, you know, for, what, 10 years? 1969, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 1969, we were completely aware of the Van Allen belt and its radiation.
Yeah, they're sending Geiger counters up. And it's a lot of it too is the magnetic field of the Earth also. Yeah, it's confining particles from solar winds too and like accelerating them inside there to like near the speed of light.
So my thing is how the hell did they get past the Van Allen belt? Now, in the actual, and here's where kind of the conspiracy, where I kind of believe this, that the Van Allen belt gives off this radiation, right? There were interviews with Buzz Aldrin and, you know, Neil Armstrong and that other guy.
Total disrespect.
And they even said, we didn't even know we were going through anything. I mean, we didn't feel anything.
And that's like a stretch, too. That's like 400 miles to like 36,000 miles above the atmosphere.
Yeah,
our atmosphere. It starts 100 miles
out, I think. Now, the inner belt starts at 400 miles out.
Yeah.
Okay. And goes to 6,000 miles. And then the outer belt runs from 8,400 miles to 36,000 miles. And then it fluctuates a little. There's a gap between the inner and outer belt.
Right.
And that's where you get a lot of satellites and stuff like that. Going around
in. Right. Well, they had that interview saying we didn't know we were even going through any type of radiation. We didn't feel anything. I have to say bullshit on that. If you are an astronaut, you know every single in and out of that mission. NASA would have told you you're going to go through the Van Allen belt. You know, and they would have explained what the fuck they had Van Allen. Not only once are you going to go through it, you're twice. You're going to go back through it on the way to Earth. So these guys had to travel through the Van Allen belt for at least 2 hours one way. So a total of 4 hours being in the Van Allen belt.
You're going to feel this.
Yeah. Well, here's the other kicker. Let's fast forward a little bit in the future. Okay. To now.
Mm-hmm.
The Orion Project is all about the Van Allen belt. And you can even look this up on YouTube. What is it? I forget what I typed in. I think I typed in Orion, NASA, Van Allen. And it's like this little tutorial about how they're trying to deal with the Van Allen belt nowadays with our technology. And I quote from the scientist, he said, "We still need to figure the Van Allen belt out to send people past it to the moon, to Mars, blah, blah, blah." He even said that for now with the technology that we have. And the other thing about the fast forwarding now to this point is the Van Allen belt has always been there and we've known about it. And now we're just trying to figure out the technology at this point to be able to get people past the Van Allen. Didn't we do that back in fucking 1969? We sent people through, right? Right? But on the trip of staying in low orbit, let's just say low orbit. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of taking over here. It boggles my mind. In low orbit, they had a transmission from Neil, Buzz, and the other guy. And they had a picture. They had, you know, they had video cameras and that kind of shit. Well, they show out of their window the Earth. And you can only see, like, this part. You know, say, like, the window's right here.
Yeah.
You could see this part, right? They're having a conversation with Houston. And they said, yeah, we're about 130,000 miles out. Blah, blah, blah. This was day 1.5. Okay? By mathematics, the next day on the mission, they landed on the moon. That's physically impossible if you were only 1.5 days out on a 3-day trek, and then within less than 24 hours, you're landing on the moon, and you look at the video of the Earth at 130,000 miles, you should be able to see the Earth whole and much smaller. See what I mean? 130,000 miles out.
Which is almost halfway there.
Halfway there. You should be able to see the Earth like this. Right? Like a circle. You should be able to see it. What?
No, it'd be much bigger. It'd still be much, much bigger at that distance.
Really?
Yeah, the Earth is a lot bigger than people think it is.
Not as much as what I've seen on that video.
Like when you're on the moon, looking back at the Earth,
you can see it.
The Earth is huge.
Yeah, but you can see it.
Because I mean, it's so much fucking bigger.
I know, but you can see the whole Earth from Mars or from Moon.
Yeah, but you're twice as far away.
Okay, but what you're saying. So half, you still should be able to see more than just that curvature out of the window.
Could have been the size of the window, maybe?
No.
And or the distance of the camera from that, yeah.
I don't know. It just looks fishy to me.
Yeah.
It looks like they stayed within the Van Allen belt, which what I would picture, because you look at the International Space Station and their pictures and that kind of stuff, and you can see the curvature and that kind of stuff from their pictures.
Yeah, barely. You can't see space at all. Unless you're looking at a, like, side profile.
Right.
If you're looking straight at the Earth, it's so big and so massive, you can only see like 10% of the Earth looking out of the space station.
Yeah. But comparable to half the distance?
Yeah.
I don't know. It looks fishy to me.
Yeah,
I don't know. It looks like they were rigging it to say they were farther than they were, and they were still within, like, the Van Allen belt before that. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Well, the weird thing, too, is they were talking about the Van Allen belts and what they should do to solve for them. And there was talks about setting off nukes.
Oh, yeah.
In the atmosphere.
They tried to, they set
they one did it.
Yeah, they set one off.
They thought that they could clear some of the particles away using a nuclear bomb off near the outer belt, and the particles would then have enough energy to escape the Earth's magnetic field. The highest was called Starfish Prime. A 1.4 megaton nuclear bomb detonated at 400 kilometers up on July 9th, 1962. However, instead of clearing the radiation, it increased it.
Yeah.
And then the Russians...
Because it absorbs radiation.
Yeah. And then the Russians set off a shit ton of trying to do the same thing. And they destroyed several satellites that were up there.
Ain't that some hillbilly shit right there?
Because they blew up...
Nuclear energy up in there, and they actually fried the electronics on their own satellites
in off of a new transatlantic satellite that's supposed to do like TV images and send stuff like that. They fried that damn thing too.
So essentially, you're saying they saw a picture like this?
Yes.
Okay. From 100,000,
130,000.
Yeah. Realistically, it should look something like
that.
Like the whole. At least from what the sun is letting us see from space.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We're talking the whole damn thing, people.
Yeah. You would be able to see the whole Earth if you were to, like, minus shade and, you know, like, shade from something like the moon coming across or something like that, like a crescent Earth. You should be able to see the Earth in its entirety. The other uncanny thing that also happened with the Van Allen belt. Now I want to kind of bring this in too, that they had astronauts shot up there, right? And they were supposed to be going to the International Space Station. Well, of course, astronauts know we always have a contingency plan if some shit goes wrong. Mm-hmm. They went up, International Space Station's coming around, they're supposed to dock. They fucking miss, right? So they got to hit the fucking space brakes, wait for this thing to come back around, then start going fast and start to try to dump.
And catch it.
Right. Well, when they went and they started hitting the space brakes, they were 50 miles away from the Van Allen belt. And the astronauts, in their reports, said when they closed their eyes, they were seeing flashes of light. And that is radiation right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's 50 miles away from them.
Yep.
How the fuck did these astronauts get through?
Well, there's a gap. Of course, right above the poles. And when they were doing their circle, when they were accelerating to get the Earth to help slingshot them off,
yeah,
that's where they went through. They went through the poles.
That's an outrageous amount of mass to be able to like
and
hit that
to, window. So they were in the minimum amount of the actual Van Allen belts that they could possibly be. And they were only in the Van Allen belts for, I think, up to 2 hours.
Yeah.
The amount of mass that it would take to shoot the gap on that, though.
Yeah, it's called the plasmasphere.
Yeah.
That they run through.
I think it's called bullshit. Pretty bullshit sure it's sphere. Called the bullshit sphere.
Okay, I'm talking about send it.
So, right. Well, they knew about the Van Allen belts and apropos. The energies, whatever the hell that is.
I don't know.
Electrons below 1 MeV, whatever MeV is. I don't know much about radiation. The only thing I know is the simple physics stuff about radiation.
It'll kill you.
Yeah.
Bruce Banner. It came back a little green.
So, but they bypassed the inner belt when they went. So they were only through the outer belt because they went
which
through.
Which is where the most around. Radiation is.
So they went around it.
I don't know.
I've got a ton of actual mathematical equations and crap here, but I got to tell you, I start reading it. As much as I like math, and I start going through this stuff about the amount of radiation and how to do everything, I start glazing over.
Yeah.
And I literally want to fall asleep. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, oh man.
So that's one of the biggest conspiracies that I have to say sets it off for me that we didn't go.
Well, they talk about the shielding and everything else, though, that could get you, could save you. But there's also the risk of once you get outside the Van Allen belt, and you start getting solar winds.
Yeah,
solar
then you have no protection.
But they said also that at the time, there was high solar activity. It's like one of the 11-year cycles of the
solar sun. Flares. Yeah.
And that actually helped clear a lot of the stuff out of the way.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
So I had stats here somewhere. Where was it? A typical Apollo suit had the strength of 0.2, I want to say grams per square centimeters. Well, then command module hull had a strength of 7 to 8 grams per cubic centimeter. And then the space station right now has a strength of 15 grams per cubic centimeter in their specially shielded areas. So what they did on the actual launch vehicle, the landing unit and whatnot, they actually had the aluminum to help shield them.
Yeah, I get like...
And then they had all the instruments around the whole outside, too.
I get the padding and that kind of shit, but it's radiation. Like, this shit is going to bombard you. It doesn't matter if you're fucking wearing an aluminum tin hat. You're still going to get fucking cooked through the aluminum, through your skull.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just like I was saying with the astronauts. They were seeing flashes of light. You know, kind of like what you were...
With the nukes, with the Navy.
Yeah, talk about that.
There was an experiment when we first started testing nuclear weapons. The military had put the Navy out on a huge Navy military ship. And like, we have to do this. If we're going to test these and we're going to use these in warfare, we have to show you guys what these are and we have to show you safe practices. So when we drop this bitch, you're going to know what to do. So what they did was they had put everybody out, you know, super far away from it, of course. And they told everybody, sit down on the deck and close your eyes and cover them with your hands. And there were reports where people had talked about their experiences and things that had happened. People had said that with their eyes closed, arms covering their eyes, hands covering their eyes, the radiation levels were so high they could see through their eyelids and see all the bones in their hands.
Like they were straight getting x-rayed.
Yeah.
That radiation poisoning coming off.
Being super far away. And then after the mushroom cloud had erected, then they were like, okay, now you can look.
Erected.
any of you, if we got any Fallout video game players in the listening pool, if you ever see the Vault Boy, where he's closing an eye, he's got his thumb up, what they had told people, if the mushroom cloud is taller and or wider than your thumb, you need to get the hell out of the way.
Get the fuck out of the way, yeah.
That was the human measuring system.
At that point, though, you're too damn... You can't outrun it. You're fucking screwed anyways.
Like you're like fucking Leonardo da Vinci, point, like you, pointing something out, like trying to do a painting.
At that point, you better just hope that you're a contortionist and you can reach down, grab your ankles, and kiss your ass goodbye.
Cause better dig a fucking hole. Better get a stick. Better get something.
Larry Stan also, when the launch is done, everything that Apollo 11 crew had received 0.18 REM each on average.
On average.
Or Roentgen equivalent man. Is what it stands for. Some kind of rating for that. And compare that to a CT scan. So they're at 0.18. A CT scan delivers 1. So when you go and get a CT scan, you actually get almost 5 times as much radiation as they received.
Yeah, a CT scan for like 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
Think about getting a CT scan for 2 hours.
Can't really record anything if you're unconscious from radiation poisoning either.
It takes about 50 REM to get radiation sickness.
I say it's a big thing to be able to go through the Van Allen belt.
Yes.
And I don't think with the technology that we had in 1969, they had that shit figured out.
That technology equivalent to today is a fucking key fob for your vehicle.
Our phones could take us to the moon with the computing power that they have.
Back in 69.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next one.
I got one that I thought was pretty interesting.
Evidence B to the court.
Evidence B.
C.
C. Thank you.
Excuse me. C. There aren't any stars in any pictures that they took. Yeah. Any of the background. You know, those were provided by NASA. So with there being no atmosphere, you'd think they'd be pretty easy to see, right?
Right.
Mark, your rebuttal?
Sure.
You can't see any stars.
Your witness.
My witness.
Exhibit A.
Have you... No, I know you're still just a baby.
That's fine.
I do realize that our parents actually watched this live. And
how, though?
And your parents... Well, your parents are probably old enough just to babysit me, and that's about it.
It's fine. It's a good defense mechanism to take shots.
So, back in the day, there used to be something called an analog camera. It wasn't the digital thing that was in your phone. It actually had film and that kind of stuff. So, all the exposures of the astronauts on the moon are daylight exposures. Because the sun's coming at them.
This is how NASA is debunking
the surface was brightly illuminated from the sun. So, go outside right now. By my back door. I'll turn the lights on. Take a picture and see if you can see with your digital camera any stars. You won't see any.
I got five on it.
The exposure on the cameras wasn't able to pick it up, and you get that a lot. I mean, there's so much light pollution down here as it is that you can't get certain pictures unless you go on.
It's just like we can't
top of a mountain in Honolulu just to see a star.
It's just like we can't take a picture of the stars in the daylight.
Yeah.
There's too much light.
And the moon is reflecting so badly. And you got to think, too, those cameras weren't that fucking good back then.
Okay, well, I have...
that one.
Judge, may I have a rebuttal, please?
Of course.
Because there's two things that I want to bring to attention with that. Is, one,
if they were to fake it, they know that people know the constellations. So just fucking leave it out. And come up with that. Two would be that how hot is it on the moon, on the sun side?
200 some degrees, I think.
272 degrees or something like that, right? There's a big swing, negative 200. Mm. And so the heat of that would have ruined the film on the exposures.
That sounds like a lazy excuse, though.
What?
It's just super easy to be like, oh, yeah, it's too fucking hot.
No, I'm saying, like, if they were actually on the moon and trying to take pictures with the old school film and that kind of stuff, it would have been fried.
Ah, okay.
Because of the temperature of the moon.
That digress.
Well, in that sense, you just say that the astronauts would have been fried, but they were insulated in the suits and everything else.
Yeah, and but the cameras on the outside, like, of the suits.
Same thing, like, outside the space station, International Space Station. That thing's... hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of degrees too, and then it drops down to negative hundreds and hundreds of degrees, and it's, but they're shielded, and the ships aren't that thick.
I'm just saying that was one of the conspiracies.
Okay,
I got one.
I think the camera one's a weak one, just because of the fact that can't see shit anyway.
I think that blocking out the stars because people knew the constellations and would have been too hard to put in there.
Try to guess where they were, when they were. There are. Keep track of them, because
you could do it, because then you can just say, well, at the time that that picture being taken, this constellation was in the sky, and for people to have to figure out the position of the Earth at that time and the rotation versus where the moon's at and the angle that they're sitting at, it would just be, you could just say, well, we're facing this way off the Sea of Tranquility, because you don't see the Earth in a lot of those pictures. So your point of reference, you could just fake it the hell out of that point. Because you don't have that point of reference. It's not like there's a big compass sitting there going, this way to the sun, this way.
This one's actually my favorite. I got another one.
Okay.
So they talk a lot about the impressions of footprints. You know, that was huge. You know, the first footprint photographed, whatever. So if a person left a footprint, and a person would sink in, then what? Why don't they talk? Like, you would think that a 17-ton spacecraft would settle a little deeper into the surface of the moon compared to a 100-pound person.
It would have set an imprint.
It set an imprint, but the base, the moon, they say, is covered by a fine dusting of powder. And that's why you see the, it's like talcum powder, and that's why you can see the footprints and the tracks. But it's not 500 feet thick of talcum powder. It's like an inch. So, I mean, you're on solid rock. There's no dirt. It's just solid rock. So, I mean, you're not, spacecraft's not going to bury into that. Yeah. And they did say there was a slight, you could see where the retro rockets, where they were coming down, where it had displaced and moved the fine powder. And as he's coming off the steps,
yeah,
or Neil Armstrong, he talks about how it's that fine powder, and it's almost like a chewed up charcoal, or a crushed up charcoal, and it's putting a layer, an inch, on his boots, and he can just kick it really easily with his toes.
Then that brings me to the pictures and the light settings on the moon.
Let's talk about the shadows.
Because when he's coming, and the one in particular that I like to reference is when, I can't remember if it was Buzz or Neil that was coming, I think it was Buzz. When Buzz was coming out of the craft, he's fully fucking illuminated in a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be able to see the man at all.
Right.
And then all the other sus-ass pictures that they took, whether obviously multiple light sources when there should only be one.
So there's one major light source out there.
The sun.
The sun.
For those of you that don't know.
And
that big ball that we're never supposed to look at.
Yeah.
And when you go outside at midnight on a full moon, pitch black, you can't see anything out there. Well, hey, yeah, you can, because it's reflecting the sun's rays right back at you.
That's a lot of reflection.
You see how bright it is on a full moon night? It's bright outside.
It is.
You can see perfectly fine. So when you're on the surface, and the surface is that reflective of the moon, yeah, you're going to get a little bit of reflection back.
Not that much.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
So the main thing is,
but if he's in that shadow, yeah, shouldn't he be the same
shade
as that shadow?
Yes.
Not with the diffusion of the light coming out.
Come on.
So the main part that they go through is there's a forensic film scientist. His name's Mark Shubin. He's looked at all the films, and he's actually won Oscars and shit like that for actually going through films. And
should have got a fucking Nobel if he proved it.
Mark Cuban?
So the shadows, if you look at them, are all parallel. There's no diverging because of how far away the sun is, which you already know, but going through the Earth, the flat earther thing.
Yeah.
That one of the tests that you do is the sun is so far away that the shadows, you can see the curvature of the Earth.
Right.
Because it's so far away, it's always parallel. So there's no diverging. For them to have it on a studio, you would have seen diverging of the shadows, and they would have been, because of how close the lights are, that they would never be parallel. They'd be off a little bit.
But you do diverging. See that in other photos.
You know, it's always parallel. Always no, parallel. You always
see,
parallel.
You see shadows that are completely...
It's always not, parallel.
Not...
Yeah.
You see shadows that are not lining up with the rest.
The only way to fake it, you would have to have 1 million lasers set up to give that light source out, which didn't exist in those quantities back then, or in the amount of money you could spend, and they were only red back then. They didn't have multicolored lasers. So if, like, Stanley Kubrick was setting this up in a freaking studio,
Stanley Kubrick
would have had to have a fucking million laser lights to fucking get the same parallel shadows. It can't be done.
There are shadows that do not line up in their photos.
Mm-hmm.
There are shadows.
Nope.
Yes, they all there
line
are.
Up. I'm telling you, they all line up.
I've seen it.
I've seen them too.
I've seen them.
I looked at them.
Okay, he's looking them up.
Hey, everyone. This is Ian with the Abnormal Matters Podcast. This is the ending of part one for the moon landing conspiracies. We've been having a great debate on this one. Definitely check out part two with the continuance of it. It was just really two long of a debate, so I had to split it up. But you can always reach out to us at theabnormalmatterspodcast@gmail.com, and you can always check us out at The Abnormal Matters on Facebook. Again, check out part 2, and thanks for listening.